Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Jacob's Pillow in Beckett, Massachusetts. It's celebrating its 82nd festival this summer. It's a National Historic Landmark, recipient of the National Medal of Arts, and home to America's longest-running international dance festival.
And we are joined, we're lucky, this morning by the Pillow's executive and artistic director, Ella Baff, and by choreographer John Higginbotham. His evening-length world premiere, Chalk and Suit, is at the Pillow this week for the piece he worked with violinist and composer Colin Jacobson and was inspired by Kandinsky's book of poems entitled Sounds. Chalk and Suit was created in part through two Jacob's Pillow creative development residencies and will be presented at the Doris Duke Theater through August 3rd.
Originally from Anchorage, Alaska, John Higginbotham studied choreography at Jacob's Pillow and graduated from the Juilliard School in 1993. He was a member of the Mark Morris Dance Group from 1998 to 2012 and founded Dance Higginbotham in 2011. The company gave its first performances in January of 2012 at the Kennedy Center, or Center, as we say in the States. He's also the recipient of the 2014 Jacob's Pillow Dance Award.
Well, Ella Baff and John Higginbotham, thank you guys for joining us. Ella, just a word to you. I can't thank you enough for what you've done with this incredible job of yours at Jacob's Pillow. It is really sensational.
Thank you very much. It's a privilege, a pleasure, an honor. I have many adjectives. Thank you so much. That's very kind.
You do such beautiful work and wonderful work, and you have such respect, not only in this region, but in the dance world as a whole. And I'm curious as to, is that ever a balance of sort of figuring out what is out there and what your responsibility is within the dance world, but also here within the artistic community of the Berkshires?
All of the above. It's all factored in to how a season's put together. Because, of course, we want people to become ever more interested in dance by showing them a huge variety of things. Actually, the other day it was pretty interesting. We had Celtic dancers. We had John Higginbotham's world premiere, Circa from Australia. On any given day, there's such a variety of dance and music also at the Pillow. So that's very much part of it, is building audiences by showing people a huge range of what dance really is about. And, yeah, absolutely, considering what the international scene is, and also people just down the road. We have a really vibrant Berkshire community here. It's all taken into account.
Do you notice ever that when your town is mentioned on the air, I said, where everybody dances?
Yes.
Okay, I just wondered if
And of course it's true.
I wondered if anybody got
Everyone does dance.
I love when you say that.
Yeah.
So, and it's true.
So, you know, there are two things you got to do. You got to make sure it's a creative hub, which it is, and which you've assured us with your artistic designation. But you've also got to keep, you know, the thing fiscally working.
Yes.
And some of your predecessors had more luck with that than others. But you've done so well. What's your secret?
People. Mm-hmm. People who love art. People who love this community, who love the Berkshires, people who love dance, who love the Pillow, people who want to be invested, I'm using that in the broadest sense, not just materially, but in the values, you know, of what our organization is about and all of the organizations here in the Berkshires, which I know we say it a lot, but it's very true. You know, the Pillow is the destination. The Berkshires is a destination for culture. So it's a great board. Really, truly, a great board, an exceptional board, and the best staff in the entire world.
Okay, so now that's terrific. Now, my question is, how about
I think so?
How about all those people who went to Connecticut College or who went to this or that and who majored in dance and who yeah. dance is the number one thing in their life and always will be?
Yeah,
are those people attracted to giving you money?
It depends. Some people can only give very little, even though they may be incredibly passionate. So a small gift given with great generosity and passion is a beautiful gift, and we humbly and happily accept it. On the other hand, you can write a check for $1 million today and send it in.
And John, when you do a choreography, how do you do that? I mean, you say, move this arm, move this leg. I mean, what do you do? How do you do it? Do you dance it yourself and then say, do what I just did? Or do you sit down at a and figure out left foot out, right foot in, do the hokey pokey, and
that's it.
did they teach you in Juilliard how to answer that question?
I think you majored in hokey pokey at Juilliard, in fact.
I minored in it.
How do you do it?
Well, it starts with me alone, usually in my apartment, and I create the steps. Oftentimes there is music involved. I'm making up something to a score that I know I will be using. And I will record myself on Photo Booth. I have a Mac computer because I won't remember anything done.
Yeah.
And then I walk into the dance studio the next day where I meet the dancers. And usually day one is filled with a lot of anxiety for me because it's hard to have a bunch of people, even friendly people, standing there looking at you waiting for you to do something and do something good. You know, you want them to be satisfied with what that's going to be. And so then I start teaching them the steps, and I'm able to retain the steps for about one day, and then it's up to them to remember what it is. And then we build the steps until, you know, one step becomes a phrase.
Okay, so you build, and in talking to novelists and storytellers, they will tell you that it's one of two schools of thought. One is that you outline it and you know exactly where you're going and you know where you want to be at the end. And then there is the other school that says, I'm going to create these characters and let them take me where they take me. So do you have an idea in your mind of where you want that to end up, or is it through that working with the dancers that you understand where you want to go?
It's each new dance has a different approach, and I have had experiences with both of those. I just choreographed a piece for Atlanta Ballet, and I knew very quickly how it was going to begin, what was going to happen in the middle, and what was going to happen at the end. The piece that we're doing here at Jacob's Pillow, Chalk and Soot, I had no idea how it was going to play out. And I have to tell you, I'm ultimately very satisfied with how it has played out, but it is not a linear story in a traditional sort of sense.
So does a dancer ever turn around to you after you say you're going to do this step and say, no, I'm not?
No, no one has ever said that.
So the choreographer is pretty in control of things.
Yeah, I would say so. But I would say that the dancers I work with are very benevolent, and they're very, very hardworking, and I think they want to do what is being asked of them. I mean, I also am sensitive. I know that if somebody can't do, you know, the splits, I'm not necessarily going to put the splits in the piece.
I was going to ask you about that, because you must have in your mind often things that the human body can't accommodate. Write a check that body can't cash.
Right. Well,
so do you find someone who can do that, or do you just have to settle?
Well, the interesting thing is that sometimes the quote-unquote settling is more exciting than what I had imagined in my head. And it is sometimes very interesting for me to see the effort of trying to achieve the impossible shape or phrase is sometimes better than actually achieving it in a perfect way. And then sometimes I will seek out a person who can do a specific
thing. Do you ever mingle with the audience during the intermission or afterwards to find out, you know, what they're really thinking about?
You know what? I love that question so much, because what I have now learned, now that I've had some experience as a choreographer, meaning that I'm sitting in the audience watching my own work, I, at intermission, run as quickly as I can to a hidden area backstage somewhere. But it's not because I don't want to know. I definitely want to know how people are responding to the work. But I also am conscious that if they know who I am, that it might make them uncomfortable, that they feel that they have to say, wonderful show. And they might hate it.
Better so put I on wanna, a disguise. And go
we'll have to get the nose and the glasses
and the mustache,
and go amongst your people.
But like the idea of attending your own funeral and hearing what people have to say about you, that doesn't bother you as much as making them uncomfortable.
No, that's fine. And also, I will say, there are people that are in my team that are in the audience who let me know if the
All right. You were talking about the non-linear nature of Chalk and Soot. So if I asked you the story, how would you answer that?
The story is it's a ritual about conjuring a person who in this case is a singer named Cher Warden, and then another character in the show is sacrificed.
Oh, we have a sacrifice.
Yeah, it's about, this is, sounds very broad, but it's about the beginning of life, it is about death, and it's about what happens in between, which in Kandinsky's case involves a lot of sort of pastoral imagery.
So, and sounds from that, from that text. Mm-hmm. So the chalk would be life and soot would be death, I would assume?
Yes.
Oh.
Temporary. Mm. And both of those things are
very
so
temporary.
So, you just wipe them away.
Mm-hmm. But Joe raised an interesting question about the relationship between the music and the dance. And you responded to that. What do you have to do to investigate Kandinsky's thoughts?
Well, I read the poems, and the composer, Colin Jacobson, also read the poems, and we decided which of the many poems we were going to use. And then, really, truly, it's an impulse. You know what I mean? You read a word or a part of the poem that is inspiring, and it makes something happen. And then you have your first building block for the piece.
Right.
And then that becomes a motif, and then the motif grows into a theme.
We are just about out of time, but I just want to end with Ella. Given that John worked at Jacob's Pillow, was studying at Jacob's Pillow, and then to come back, I mean, that must be your ultimate. I mean, that sort of brings
it fantastic.
All full.
It's fantastic.
Circle.
And also, a couple of people in the company are alums of the school at Jacob's Pillow as well. So I always say if we had anything to do with it, which I hope we did, and they say we do, but it's a wonderful thing to have that kind of homecoming. Very, very special. And, I just wanted to mention, if I may, that John and Colin Jacobson, the composer of this amazing piece, he's so brilliant. Everyone in the cast is. But they're going to do a pillow talk at Jacob's Pillow on Saturday at 4:00 in Blake's Barn, which is where our archives is, which also has an amazing exhibit of
fabulous
dance movie posters.
Oh, that's neat.
It's extraordinary. But you'll hear John and Colin talk about the collaboration and talk about this piece in depth. And there's so much to say about it.
And how many people can the barn hold?
Oh, 100 people.
Really? And you have to call in advance or just show up?
No, it's absolutely free. Free and open to the public.
And you can find out more information by going to jacobspillow.org, jacobspillow.org. Dance Higginbotham's Chalk and Soot will be presented in the Doris Duke Theater through August 3rd. And for more information about that and the rest of the festival and the pillow talk, jacobspillow.org. Ella Baff and John Higginbotham, a great pleasure. Thank you so much for being with
us.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.